came down from Spokane, Washington. We came down on the train, and we crossed the Carquinez Straits on the ferryboat Solano, which was the largest ferryboat in existence and was one of the largest ferryboats I think ever built. We saw the Solano and Costa ferryboats were what were used to bring passenger trains and freight trains across the bodies of water up there. There'd be no bridges at that time. We came down as far as the Oakland Mole, and my father left me, the oldest of the four boys. There were only three at that time. And my mother got Oakland Mole. He went across to see about what had happened in the earthquake of 1906. He came back with all the stories of all the wreckage and the damage by the fire and so forth. And we arrived in Bakersfield then on the train shortly after that. Now, my memory's not too good about those times. I do remember being in the Hockheimer store where Rock's building now is located, and they had an hydraulic elevator there. A rope went up through the corner of the elevator, and the operator stood there with a rag on the rope, and so the elevator went up, get up to the second floor by the rope and push, and then close the valve in the basement and stop the elevator, and then he'd reach over and take the little button hook and open the door. Southern Hotel was the cultural center of Kern County, and was so for many years. Down where the Bank of America stands now, there was a labor stable. Things have changed. Like I say, they're constantly changing here at Bakersfield. I do remember of trips around through the oil field, partly on train and partly a horse and buggy. That was the mode of transportation. The old automobiles weren't very reliable in those days. The first ones had come in around the turn of the century, but by 1907 or 8, well, they had some Buicks and Hupmobiles and Lotomobiles. Other cars that went around from the roads were much more than trails. But anyway, in that era, President Taft signed the final order on the withdrawal of the Naval Reserve at Elk Hills, which pretty much pricked the bubble for the Taft activities. It had been roaring along there, the idea of great activity out in Elk Hills, because Buena Vista had been discovered, and of course that had come after the Midway Sunset Field had been discovered. So there was a gradual slump at that time, and my family took me away from here about 1913, and getting back into the art business again, I went off to University of California, Berkeley, in the days before Mario Savio and some of the rest of them, and got a degree in petroleum engineering. I left Berkeley on the 15th of May, 1924, on the Santa Fe Railroad, 10 o'clock at night, in a sleeper. Landed in Bakersfield somewhere around 8 a.m. down here at the Santa Fe Depot, where the Amtrak Depot now is. I had breakfast at the Harvey House, which was the name of the little restaurant that they had there at the station. I took a speed up and got off at 19th and G and walked up to the Standard Oil Company office, went in and saw the head person in the producing department, a man by the name of Lynn Little, pulled out a letter that I'd received from an application over 225 Bush Street in San Francisco, which in words of one syllable, says, "Mr. Little, here's Mr. Brown, put him to work." So he says, "Well," he says, "I don't have anything for you to do right now, son." He says, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put you on a rotary crew if I can think of something." So he put me in his car. He had either a Cadillac or a Lincoln, a great big car. It looked awfully big to me, I know. And we rode out to Taft, and he deposited me in a bunkhouse out on McNeely's. And I went to work on a rotary crew for two or three months. And, of course, the rotary equipment wasn't very good, it wasn't very safe, and it was, it was very interesting. But I was most glad that when the engineering department came by and put their finger on me and says, "Come on in, back into 19th and G in the Bakersfield office, we've got a job for you." So I started out then in the engineering department, and part of my early job was scouting for the Standard Oil Company, which meant I traveled around all through the San Joaquin Valley, spying, if you please, upon the operations of Shell, Marlin Oil Company, then the General Petroleum Company, which is now Mobil, Associated Oil Company, which later became Tidewater Associated, which now is Getty. At that time, I met George Sullivan, who was the chief engineer out here at the Kern River office of the Tidewater. I don't remember the name of that little village out there, but there were
Oil Center.
They still had a one-room schoolhouse out there, a big Tidewater camp, and that had shrunk in size from around 5,000 people earlier in the century. I'm going to guess about 1950 or 60, it had about a population of about 5,000 people out there, and there were still remnants of the dwellings and the activities that had gone on out there at that time. Well, shortly after going to work in the Bakersfield office of Scout, I was sent out to Taft as an engineer, and the reason that the Standard Oil Company put out engineers in those days is because the state of California had initiated what they called then the Mining Bureau, which now is called the California State Division of Oil and Gas. And the field men in those days wanted to drill the wells the way they knew how, rule of thumb, and go out and look at the nation, smell the mud, and set the pipe there. And that was the way they did. They had really no engineering. ordinary, but they managed to bring in quite a bit of oil. As a matter of fact, oil was by that time becoming to be a glut on the market, due principally to huge fields in Southern California, notably Signal Hill and Santa Fe Springs. They were just producing much oil, just oceans of oil, and had driven the price down to a point where here in Kern County we were practically shut in. The Tupman property of Standard out in Elk Hills was all shut in. Section 30 was all shut in. Kern River was all shut in. And we were just sort of keeping a skeleton organization alive here in Kern County. So, however, with the opening up of some drilling, I was sent out to Taft. They'd given an office and headquarters out there. And like I say, my job was to keep peace between the California State Mining Bureau and the superintendents and foremen of those days that wanted to drill the wells in such a way. Well, we finally wangled it around to where the engineers did the engineering on the job and the practical men did the grunt work on the job, and the mining bureau gave us their approval and their blessing, and things worked out very well. 1926 came along the merger of Standard Oil Company and the Pacific Oil Company. Now, the Pacific Oil Company has a very interesting history. It previous to that was named the Kern Trading Oil Company, KT&O, with many properties in the Kern River and Taft, Bakersfield, not Bakersfield, but Maricopa, in that area. The KT&O, Kern Trading Oil Company, was an outgrowth of the SPFOD, Southern Pacific Fuel Oil Department. The Southern Pacific Fuel Oil Department came into being because of the Southern Pacific Railroad Company. And the Southern Pacific Railroad Company had received a grant from the Congress of the United States of so much land, checkerboard sections to be given for the development of the railroad, to pay out the cost of bringing the railroad to the people. Accepting that, they were the odd-numbered sections, and then sections 36 and 16 of each township were given to the state, or the state had them for school purposes. The money to be gained from selling these lands was one of the sources of revenue for the schools. They didn't have a big tax base at that time. A lot of the land, some of the property in Elk Hills, by the way, was sold several times, and somebody paid up to $1.25 an acre for this land out in Elk Hills, if you can imagine. And then after holding it for a year or two, they let it lapse for taxes, and then the state of California sold it all over again, so that was one of the continuing sources of revenue for the school. Well, you may wonder why the Southern Pacific Railroad Company had alternate sections out way out in Elk Hills, Maricopa, and the like. And it was because they had presented their case to Congress, or the Department of the Interior, that the land down in the Mojave Desert and the desolate regions that went along the railroad were valueless. They had no value, and so Congress or the department said, okay, we'll let you select some other land in lieu of the land that you would get along your railroad down here in these desolate areas. And the only reason they didn't have more land up here in the oil areas is because they ran out of in lieu. Anyway, these checkerboard sections were a very, very juicy acquisition by Standard Oil at the time. The prize stockholder, a fellow by the name of Julius Cresson, had opposed the sale of Pacific Oil properties to Standard Oil Company, Pacific Oil being the successor to the current trading oil company. And when he went to his ultimate reward, the stockholders that took over his estate promptly decided on a merger with Standard Oil Company, so that as of January 1st, 1926, the two companies merged and became a very, very powerful producing company here. And in the meantime, I was working up the ladder, and after being transferred around different places, it seemed like I stayed in one place not over 5 years at a time, I found that in the early 30s, there was such a glut of oil on the market that the oil companies all banded together and decided that there would be some sort of a regulation, that they didn't want to waste the oil. There had already been huge reservoirs built out here in the Kern River, in which oil was just left out. Fortunately, this oil here in Kern River has very little gasoline in it in its native state. I mean, it can be distilled out, but it's not like the oil that you get at 35 or 40 gravity, which is mostly gasoline. This heavy 12-gravity oil is not very volatile, and it can be stored in the open without appreciable loss. Well, huge reservoirs were built out here in Kern River save the oil, because it was firmly believed by the people in those days that you did not dare to shut in a well. If you once shut in an oil well, why, the well would be ruined. Something horrible would happen. The sand would come in, the water would come in, the casing would collapse, or no telling what. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on the way you look at it, there was a strike of the oil field workers along in the early 20s, very early 20s. And the wells were involuntarily shut in. And after the strike was over, they started the engines going and the rods pumping, wells produced, and there was no evident harm. Nothing bad happened to the great majority of the wells. Sure, there were some wells that water had seeped in because they had not been properly completed and water had been kept under control, but by and large, the wells were all in good shape. So then when they found that there was this big glut of oil on the market, and due to the existence of Signal Hill and Santa Fe Springs Administration for War would be set up. And prior to that time, the companies had gotten together and set up a conservation committee. And I was nominated to be one of two Standard Oil Company representatives on that committee in the headquarters in Los Angeles, and I was transferred down there. And this outfit then was succeeded, taken over by the Petroleum Administration for War, which set quotas, not by properties or by companies or anything, but set quotas of how much oil could be produced. The idea being that they didn't want oil wasted because the Navy might need the oil someplace, but should be kept in the ground. So part of my job at that time was to help prepare schedules and see that individual wells all received their proper quota. And like I say, it was the Petroleum Administration for War, the idea that allotments could not be transferred between wells. You'd have each well was given a certain quota of oil to make, had to make that oil itself and couldn't go on over to its neighboring well. I don't want to reveal too much, but there were many outfits and the two wells went into the same tank and nobody knew just who made what, but by and large, I think it worked out pretty well and it ended up by considerable conservation being accomplished. Then, later, there followed a period of deeper wells discovered here in Kern County, 10 Sections Field, Greeley Field, deeper Elk Hills Field, and others, and when these came on, of course, they were given certain quotas, and in the meantime, before the war got too far along, the company had discovered a gas field and owned property, a gas field up in a little place called Rio Vista on the Sacramento River. And they reached out their little finger and touched me and said, "You go up and take charge of the Rio Vista gas field, drill us some wells." So I went up there, and we had 16 strings of tools going at one time, drilling wells to furnish gas to take the place of fuel oil, which was being put into tankers, which were becoming floating tank farms for the United States Navy in the Pacific. So we had all this oil tied up out there, and we had to have gas to run the domestic refinery and so forth. So that was a big spurt on the gas. Then comes 1950, and I come back here again to the Greeley Field as the district superintendent. And I stayed that way then until I retired in 1966. And we wonder about the shortage of oil. I wonder that it has lasted as long as it has, considering a lot of the wasteful practices that occurred prior to the dawn of intelligence. The Greeley Field, which I was most intimately in touch with here, of course, in my area, was Kern River Field, Wheeler Ridge Field, Trico Oil and Gas, that was the King's Tulare and Kern County corner, Trico, three counties. The Greeley Field was capable of making 12,500 barrels a day just from the Greeley unit. I'll tell you what a unit is in just a minute. From the Greeley unit, it was thought by the engineering department that a production of not to exceed 11,000 barrels a day would take the best advantage of the pressure of the edge water coming in and pushing the bubble of oil up to into the top of the structure. And I'm kind of talking this as a geologist. And when I talked to my son, who's a high school teacher, about what did I say tonight when I came here, he says, "Well, whatever you do, don't get too technical." He says, "You're not talking to a bunch of engineers." He says, "So don't go telling them all about geology and anticlines and monoclines and Babbitt and the bearings and all that sort of thing." He says, "Try to keep it interesting." So I hope I'm trying to keep it interesting. Anyway, the point I'm getting around to say is that whereas this field produced 11,000 barrels a day for years, it dropped off to practically nothing after I retired, and not because I retired, but because what nature did to it. I'd like to take credit for something, but I have been unable to get any accurate statistics lately. I haven't gone really inquiring except from some of the people I knew that worked out there. But about 500 barrels a day, I believe, is the very maximum that field would take right now. Well, you take 500 from a field that could make, 15, 20 years ago, 12,000 barrels a day, and you take a lot of other fields in the same position, Cuyama and others. Well, you can see where the shortage is coming from. It isn't a manufactured deal. It's a real honest-to-goodness shortage. So I just take this opportunity to point out the fact that the oil fields that we have are none of them any fountain of youth, although this Kern River field is getting rejuvenated wonderfully by the injection of steam. This oil at Kern River, of course, is low gravity, which means it's almost like asphalt or thick like asphalt. And because it flows so slowly, like the river of molasses in January, when it's at ordinary earth temperature or when it's cold, it was discovered, not entirely by accident, but almost so, that by heating up the oil down in the ground, you can stimulate it or you can make it run faster. You can bring it out, if you like, diluting your molasses by pumping steam down into the ground where the oil is. You can heat up this oil and it brings the oil in over to the next well, or you can shut the steam off for a while and blow it to the air, and the oil will come gushing in to take its place, and you'll get a well that was making 5 barrels, 10 barrels, or 15 barrels. You get maybe 75 or 80 or 90 barrels a day out of this well. So this is a field that has been rejuvenated and is now, I believe, exceeding the maximum between 1910 and 1916, 100,000, no, not 100,000, roughly, about 60,000, 70,000 barrels a day, maybe. Well, that night, between 80 and 100,000 barrels a day, and that's what is coming now. So it's a very remarkable feat, I think. And, honestly, what was I going to tell you about? I held something a year back that I was going to mention.
Unit?
Oh, unit. Ah, yes, unit. That's where you have land of diversified interests owned by different oil companies. And the original idea of leases and so forth was pretty much dog-eat-dog. You get in there and you drill the wells the first, you drill the firstest and the mostest, and you get out the mostest oil. Well, when you get the drilling wells down to 11,500 feet, and I don't know what they cost now in this play of time, but I signed many an AFE after, of course, receiving budget approval from our San Francisco office, for upwards of $200,000 for a well. But when you're drilling wells like that, you're not about to engage in a line war that is trying to drill a well to stop it until whatever your neighbor's drilling all the time. You're going to get together with him, you're going to take your hat off, go into his office and say, now look, Mike, let's get together here, and you drill a well here, and I'll drill one here, and you drill one here, and we'll stagger them around, we'll all get more oil that way, and it won't cost us so much money. And Mike said, sure, that's fine and dandy. Well, what to do, you get Mike and John and Bill and all of them together for there, the Standard and Tri-County Land Company and the Superior Oil Company and the Mobil Oil Company, and there were one or two other outfits involved. You all get together and sit around the table and say, all right, we'll pool our interest. We've had our engineers and our geologists go over this, and we know how much oil there is under each parcel of land here. So you're entitled to this percent of the total, and you're entitled to this percent of the total. We'll take it out that way. I'll take it out this way. So no matter where the well is drilled, you'll get you know, the standard case of the 66% in that particular field, because they have 66% of the acreage and the volume, and Mobil 25% and the Superior 30% or something of that sort. So the well, wherever the well was drilled, on whose property, why, you got your percentage of the oil out of it. So that was the unit that I was first brought down to work with from my experience in the other Petroleum Administration of the War. And then they added on the other fields to that, just well as the active drilling, you know, the hard work tapered off and it became a matter of routine production. But then I had these other fields to look after, and we had old flurries here and there. We didn't have anything left in the Wheeler Ridge, but we had some development out in the Innis field. We had some gas development up in the Trico field, and we had numerous repair jobs, and we had some new work in the Kern River field, in the Kern River bottom, as we call it. And it's, well, it was a case of never a dull moment. We had, at that time, the deepest producing field, or one of the deepest producing fields in the state of California, out of Wasco. Wells were around 14,000 feet. But they gave up. I had never before in all my 30 years at that time with the Standard Oil Company abandoned a well that had 500 or 600 or 700 pounds of pressure on it. The casing had, we had the gauge on there, and there was this last well in the field, but the gas would pressure bleed off, and it just wasn't economical to produce a small amount of oil and gas that came out of it anymore. So I had the pleasure of abandoning a well with 500 pounds of pressure.